Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome back to Simply Serie A, the Italian football podcast brought to you by Sofa Sports Media and the FNX Network. As ever, I'm your host, Harry Simeu, and once again, we've got plenty to discuss, including that incredible Derby della Madonnina, Juventus' first defeat of the season, and much more coming your way in the next half an hour to 40 minutes or so. And of course, I'm joined by my two regular panellists this week. Welcome back to Simply Serie A, Vittorio Campanile. How are you doing, my friend?
I'm great, thanks.
Good, good. Glad to hear it. And of course, Tommy Milanese from 90 Minute. How are you, my friend?
Living the dream, man. How are you?
Living the dream. I like that one. Yeah, I'm good, mate. Not too bad, not too bad. Surviving. And of course, there's only one place to start this week, isn't it? The Derby della Madonnina, Milan 2-3. Spalletti's side leapfrogged Milan after a victory in the 170th Derby between the clubs. Not sure many people saw that coming, apart from our very own Vittorio, of course, who did predict it on the last show. I've got to say, Vittorio, did you mean it, or was you as surprised as us to see Inter go there and obviously turn Milan over?
No, because especially in Italy, the derbies, usually the team who arrives in the worst condition wins. And this happened especially in the Rome Derby and in the Milan Derby, because the atmosphere, it's so big. It reminds me a little bit of the River-Boca Junior rivalry. So, you know, Inter came in such a tough situation that they give 100% everything they had. On the other side, probably Milan was so convinced they could win that they didn't play at the maximum. And this is why Inter won at the end.
Interesting stuff. And Tommy, you know, that's an interesting point, isn't it? That teams in Italy in the derbies, they tend to get up for it. And often we see the sides that are probably the underdogs go out and win that. What did you make of the derby overall?
Well, it was a very good game to watch. And I was very happy about it, because it happened in the past few years that sometimes a derby can end maybe 0-0 or even like 1-0. Because maybe sometimes as teams, maybe they feel a bit too much pressure from media, fans, whoever it can be. And maybe they'd be scared to attack whoever. But that was not the case, because we saw a goal after a couple of minutes. And then the whole game was amazing, especially the second half. And I would say the real person to praise for this victory, in my opinion, is Luciano Spalletti, which we've been talking quite badly about him, both me, myself and Adam as well in the last episode. I still stand by my words. But in this case, I think he did a very, very good job. And I mean, I'm going to be very quick on tactics and stuff, but I really love the way he put his team down. So with the three midfielders, it was Brozovic, of course, the mediano that was there. But then the two mezzali, that's how we call it, Gagliardini and Vecino, it was one that was a bit more defensive and Vecino a bit more offensive. So they could switch easily from a 4-2-3-1 with Vecino as a CAM and also go back to a 4-3-3 in defense. So that, in the end, worked out very, very well, because Vecino was the goal scorer for the first goal. And I think he played an incredible game. For the whole game he played was amazing.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know, Vittorio, it is true. We have been sort of slating Luciano Spalletti on recent shows. Is that enough to turn the opinion of him, though? I still think he's kind of a dead man walking. I don't know what you think about that.
This is a very important step for him. You know, winning the derby, it's very, very important. But it's more important for Spalletti that Inter reached the Champions League spot. And if Inter arrive at the end of the year in front of Milan and third in the Champions League spot, then I think his job is safe. So he still have to do a lot because the gap is not that big. And Inter has a lot of tough match. I don't know if we're going to talk about the fixture, but of the team competing for the Champions League spot, Inter is the one that has the worst fixture. So Spalletti still have to do a good job. And, you know, we criticize him in the past because he made wrong decision. And finally in Derby, he show up and did everything perfect. But the road is still long. You know, next weekend after the break, there is Inter Lazio, a very important match for both teams. So, you know, Spalletti has still a long road. But if he arrived third, especially in front of Milan, then his job should be safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, you mentioned the race for the top four there. And Roma, obviously, they're 6 points behind Inter now. And Roma are down in fifth. But, you know, it's not an impossible gap to turn around. And, you know, so you're totally right in saying that Inter have a long way to go. Let's not forget as well that they were, of course, without Icardi. They were without Raja Nainggolan, without Miranda, without João Mário. And plus, they'd just been dumped out of the Europa League by Eintracht Frankfurt. So confidence, you would have thought, would have been really low. But Tommy, the performance didn't show that, did it?
Yeah, that's the magic of the derby. Like, well, this is exactly what Vittorio said in the last episode. In a derby, anything can happen. And literally anything. Like, there's no logics behind it. And to be fair, I'm quite surprised myself. I thought that even though, again, in the derby, everything can happen, I still thought that Milan was going to win this. But again, Spalletti did a good job to putting the team down. Gattuso, I think he was more, I don't know, I think he thought he was going to win it, and he kind of underestimated Inter playing on the wings and stuff. And it just turned out a great game. And yeah, Spalletti's definitely got a lot of points from the fans, definitely. But I'm not sure myself if it's enough for him to keep the job, even if he finishes in top four.
Okay, interesting. And looking at it from a Milan point of view now as well, because it's only fair that we do that. Did this game, Vittorio, prove your point last week that if you stop Piontek, you stop Milan?
I think it did. And, you know, Piontek has been great this season, even with Genoa. But Milan has a lot of talented players, and this is the lack of Gattuso. I blame Gattuso. He has so many good players, and still Milan doesn't play great football. And he was surprised to see Inter playing like that. Tommy said it exactly. The Vecino position create a lot of problems to AC Milan, and Gattuso wasn't able, as normally managers do, to change a little bit the team and solve the problem. So, you know, I blame Gattuso a lot for this defeat. Inter played really well, but I thought Milan could have won it, but Gattuso made mistakes. I said it already. I don't like Gattuso as a manager. He's very good in motivating the team, but not that much in organizing the team, etc. One example, Suso, for me, played really, really bad, and he didn't get subbed on Sunday. So, and he could change a lot of things around. The midfield of Milan wasn't great. You have Biglia on the bench. Put him in, you know, and try to play, have a more better ball possession that Milan had on the derby. So a lot of little mistakes that in the end cost you the match. And I really blame Gattuso on that.
Didn't Biglia score a wonderful free kick the week before as well?
He did, yeah.
He did. So it's interesting that he left him out. But for me, I think you're spot on. I think the whole Gattuso thing, he's one of those guys, isn't he? And if I was to think about managers to compare him to in the Premier League for the purpose of our listeners, you'd probably say he's a bit like a Harry Redknapp in the sense that he gets everyone going. Everybody likes him. Everybody wants to play for him and enjoys playing for him and is motivated under him. But in terms of tactical knowledge, maybe he's a bit lacking. Maybe he's a bit behind others. And credit to Spalletti, he's a manager who, not just from us, has received criticism from all angles, hasn't he, for most of this season. And he pulled it out of the bag at the weekend. But Tommy, this game was an excellent advert, wasn't it, for Serie A to the viewers abroad? Because, you know, it was Sunday night. I was supposed to meet up with a friend of mine. He invited me round his house and I said, look, I'm only going to come if you're going to stick the derby on. And he was a bit like, oh, you know, it's Italian football. It's boring. I don't want to watch that. And I made him watch it and he absolutely loved it. Now, if ever there was an advert for Serie A, this was it, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, when I came Monday morning to my office, Most people here in Nansemena are British and follow basically just the Premier League. But I heard a lot of people that came to me and say, wow, that was actually a great game. Because I remember that funny thing that last year when it was the Milan derby, I remember telling to everyone, like, guys, go watch it. It's going to be a great one. You're going to have fun. And then he ended up 0-0 with an incredible chance missed by Cardi in the last seconds. So then everyone's like, oh, typical Italian football, defensive, like, you know, whatever, forget it, go back to Premier League. But actually, this time, I didn't say anything, but everyone came to me and they said they enjoyed it. And we talked a bit about it, which is something that has really happened here, and I guess in a lot of places in London and UK.
Absolutely. It was a great game. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and so did my friend in the end. Good on him.
Right. I was going to ask you, yeah.
Right, let's move on to Juventus, who suffered a 2-0 defeat at the hands of Genoa. Goals from Pandev and their former player, Sturaro. Juventus hadn't lost the game in the league since April the 22nd, when Napoli were their conquerors. Was this kind of expected to happen at some point, guys, given their Champions League commitments, given that Ronaldo, Chiellini, Matuidi were rested and there was numerous other players out injured? Vittorio, in your eyes, was Juventus' unbeaten run always going to come to an end at some point between now and the end of the season?
Well, eventually, but I'm a little bit disappointed to see the starting 11 of Juventus. Now, we said that the Scudetto discussion is over, but still, there are important matches that Juventus can really make a difference, especially in the Champions League spot. Juventus has to play with all the teams except Lazio, if I'm not wrong. So if Juventus start playing with a B team, let's call it like that, against AC Milan or Inter, they're going to lose, and this is going to help those teams. So against Genoa, there was nothing at stake, so I can understand it. But yeah, the problem of a team already winning the Scudetto in March is that then the rest of the season, they probably going to play the B team. The other point that we have to make is, I hope this match proved everybody that Rugani is not a top defender. It's not the first time. This is, I think, at least the third or fourth match that he performed badly. And I know there are a lot of people saying Rugani is a very promising defender. Well, guys, maybe he is, but not Juventus level. And I hope this match proved it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Tommy, you know, VAR came into this one, didn't it? They were really busy, the VAR. They ruled out a penalty for Genoa and then a goal for Juventus. In your opinion, were they correct calls?
Well, I think every game now basically is full of VAR episodes. I mean, to be fair, I agree with both of the decisions. I didn't in real time for like the Dybala goal, for example, but then watching back. And again, I've always said in this podcast and everywhere that I'm a big fan of VAR, and I'm glad it's there, because without it, Juve would have gone 1 year up with the Dybala goal, and then maybe Genoa would have never recovered. So, I mean, yeah, again, I agree with the referee, with the assistant referee, video assistant referee, and yeah, I'm glad it's there.
Yeah, me too. I'm glad it's there as well. Vittorio, if you look at this season as a whole, Genoa have now become one of three sides to have taken points off Juve this season. Now, when people look at Serie A from the outside, the first thing they say is that Juventus are too dominant and it's become boring. It's become a monopoly and so it's pointless to watch. But when results like this happen, and regardless of the side that Allegri picked, it does kind of make everybody take notice again, doesn't it? It does make people turn their heads and say, actually, Juventus are not indestructible.
Yes, they're not indestructible. I think the biggest difference is that Allegri can pick like 17, 80 players of very high level, while Napoli, Inter has 12, maybe 13 players of that level. So that's the biggest difference. But let us not forget that last year, there have been a tougher league for Juventus. You were saying that Napoli beat them away, so at home. So today, the gap is bigger, especially because Juventus, let's not forget, Juventus invested heavily this year, this summer, to win the Champions League. They paid Ronaldo a lot of money. And now, for the first time, the financial year of Juventus is negative. So they make a big step. They took a huge risk. And obviously, now the gap between Juventus and the other Italian team is huge. But what Juventus is trying to do is win in the Champions League. So that's why they invested that badly. And if they don't reach it, then, you know, this summer there's going to be question marks.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And Tommy, I was reading about this game today as well. Obviously, I've seen the highlights of it. I didn't watch the full game. I've seen the highlights of it. And I read that the celebrations in the stadium were so wild that the glass between the crowd and the pitch was broken. Is that true?
Well, we know that Italian fans can be very passionate. And to be fair, I mean, in general, they're, you know, I'm a Sampdoria fan, as you know, so they're kind of my rivals. But I've got to give it to them. When they do turn up, they're very good fans, like most teams in Italy. And I did read something else, though, that made me quite laugh. I heard that the stadium was sold out, obviously, and then when a lot of Genoa fans realized that Ronaldo wasn't playing and wasn't even on the bench, then they complained and they kind of wanted their money back, which is quite funny. But I mean, obviously, I'm not talking about the real Genoa fan. This is probably just, you know, those people that don't report football and they just want to see Ronaldo. So
yeah,
I know that the real Genoa fan, they would have gone anyway. So,
yeah, they're casual fans, isn't it? Every club has them.
Oh yeah, but also like, there's a lot of people that support Juventus, and I mean now, especially in this era, Juventus, because obviously they won the league a lot, but maybe 10 years ago, Inter, Milan, or whatever, in other cities, which is a bit annoying in my opinion. I remember going to stadium sometimes for Sampdoria Juventus, and when Juventus score, then you see people that are not in their way and celebrating even in front of you, and it, you know, it's not very nice. But whatever, you know, this time it didn't happen. They lost, they didn't score, so fair play for Genoa fans.
Yeah, I think that's a problem everywhere, isn't it? I mean, I've got friends that live next door to me in North London that support Manchester United, and you know,
yeah, of course,
there's lots of that, and I think it is strange, isn't it? For me, I would have thought that growing up you'd want to support a team that you can go and watch regularly, and I know that when you're a kid you can fall in love with a club based on players and based on their success, but for me, part of the football thing is going every week and enjoying it and watching my team. So for me, I find it hard to get my head around that, how someone hundreds of miles away can support a team from all the way up there. And
yeah,
so
but it's about representing your city as well, I think. Like, I can really, like, I know this because my dad, for example, is an AC Milan fan. I mean, he's not a massive football fan, to be fair. He doesn't watch every game and stuff. He's a bit of a casual fan as well. But he does support AC Milan. So when I was a kid, like very, very young, he bought me an AC Milan shirt with Baggio, which I still have. And he told me basically, you know, he was taking me to the games when Sampdoria or Genoa was playing Milan and stuff. But then when I reached the age of consciousness, then me and my brother like, opened the newspaper and saw Sampdoria. It's like, oh, that kid is amazing. And then we read about it, you know, from Genoa. It's this mix between these two teams from Genoa of the past. And we just got interested into it. And we asked, Dad, you know what? Can you take me to watch Sampdoria? We like that. Sorry.
Well, Sampdoria had some legends of their own, didn't they? So that's completely understandable.
But when I started, just gonna finish the story. When I started, we were in Serie B. We were in Serie B. It was 2003, 2004, and luckily we got promoted that year. And then, yeah, my first game was in 2004, 2005 against Regina. All that. This is a bit of trivia.
Lovely. At least you're not a glory hunter. That's the main thing.
Yeah.
We have to talk about Sturaro, I think. I mean, there have been this big discussion this winter of Juventus selling Sturaro for 80 million euros. That didn't make sense because he got injured. He was never playing with Juventus. And who scored the goal that allowed Genoa to win against Juventus? Obviously, Sturaro. So, you know, all the people discussing say, yeah, this is not... It's not possible. 80 million euros for a player that is at least average, and then he score against Juventus and celebrate. I thought it was really funny. I don't know you, but it makes a lot of sense, right?
Yeah. Football is funny sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. Football has a funny way of turning around and biting you on the ass sometimes, doesn't it? great to see, though, from a neutral perspective anyway, not from a Juventus perspective, of course. But let's talk about Vittorio's city rivals now. Let's talk about Roma. They were beaten at Spal, and the Claudio Ranieri beginner's luck has disappeared already, hasn't it? You know, they lost against a side that haven't won at home for 6 months. Vittorio, am I being a little bit harsh on Ranieri? He did have a lot of players missing, and some of them were half fit, weren't they?
I think Ranieri made a terrible mistake. If you check the starting 11, we know he loves to play with a 4-4-2, but you cannot put on the 4-4-2 Kluivert and El Shaarawy wingers in the midfield, because that changed your team in a 4-2-4, and it was far too offensive. And Sonsi and Cristante was the only midfielder, and they got hammered by Spal that was playing with five midfielders. And in fact, if I'm not wrong, the ball possession in the first half was like 65% for Spal. So Spal in the first half dominated Roma because of this terrible decision of Ranieri. In fact, in the second half, both got subbed, Kluivert and El Shaarawy, and Roma started playing better. Not very good football, but the ball possession increased. So I think Ranieri has a lot to blame himself, and maybe he will learn from this mistake. Spal, last time they won at home was the 27th of September. So this gives you a little bit the dimension of the incredible defeat of Roma. Roma is playing really bad. You were saying that the gap between Roma, that is fifth, and Milan, that is fourth, is not huge. The biggest concern for me is how Roma is playing. They lost the derby badly. They won against Empoli, but they didn't deserve. And they lost against Spal, and they played really badly and didn't create that many chances. Now, we can say that probably the penalty that gave Spal the chance to win the match, I'm not sure it was a penalty, but that's another discussion. Spal played better and deserved to win. Roma is not playing great football, even though they have a lot of good players. Now, we said that Ranieri is not a great coach. He's not a manager that comes in and changes the team. He's not a top-level manager. But I didn't expect him to see him making these terrible mistakes. And then try to give Schick another chance. Schick was invisible Saturday. I don't think he touched the ball ever in 95 minutes. You know, he was awful. So you can't rely only on Zeko. And it's going to be really difficult for Roma if they keep playing like that.
Yeah, I mean, Tommy, looking at that gap that we were talking about, had Roma picked up all 3 points at Spal, they would now be 1 point behind Milan in fourth, and the race for the Champions League would have been very much on. Yes, you know, it's still retrievable. It's still only 4 points between them and Milan in fourth. But how bad of a chance was that they've missed? They must be hitting their heads against the wall.
Yeah, absolutely. But I can't agree more with what Vittorio said. I think this is also what we were touching on last week when you asked us, like, when we talked about Ranieri, about the job. And yeah, he loves to play with 4-4-2, and that is not what Roma doesn't have the players to play 4-4-2, because they've been historically, like in the past few years, buying wingers and playing with this 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1 or whatever you call it. Just like Vittorio said, 4-4-2, if you have Kluivert and El Shaarawy as a kind of, you know, the midfielders on the sides, they have offensive but also defensive duty, which they're not really used to do. El Shaarawy, AC Milan used to play basically as a forward. And Schick as well, and Dzeko, like, they never really, I mean, Di Francesco tried a few times, but they never really played together like that. And Cristante is not really that kind of player that does that job for as a 2 of CM next to Nzonzi. You can really see this because, as Vittorio said, in the second half, then Zaniolo and Perotti came on. They changed the things around, and that's where Roma really started playing, because in the first half, they were absolutely horrible. And they have this incredible player, which is Zaniolo, but if you think about it, he doesn't really fit in the 4-4-2. And so I cannot expect Roma to not start Zaniolo in the form he is. He's such an incredible player for them now. He's probably the best informed player at the moment. So he's going to have to change things around if you want to. Right? You can't really take a job of a team that's not already doing that well and pretend like you need to do your game. You have to kind of pick it up where it was left. And then if you want to change, you have to do it slowly. And that's I don't think that's what Roman is now. And even though it's not over, in my opinion, they'll never reach Champions League.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. It's not over. But yeah, the form is not good and things aren't really looking promising. Let's move on to a little bit of news now. Let's talk about Mauro Icardi. And I know we've spoken about him lots in the last few weeks, but it is a story that is worth touching upon. It is a story that keeps popping up. It's a story that keeps rearing its ugly head. And there are reports today that he's set to return from exile and that he will begin training again this Thursday. Vittorio, how do you think or expect his teammates to react to this? I mean, as professionals, they should just get on with it. But surely when something like this goes on, it's not easy to move past it, is it?
No, it's not. And the funny thing is, if you took notice of the quotes of the players, only Politano, I think, said after the derby, I hope to have Icardi back. All the others didn't talk about Icardi, never mentioned it. And this tells you that the real problem is with the rest of the players. So, I don't know. They're going to be professional. And you have to see even in which condition Icardi. It's a month that he's not training. So you don't know really in which condition the player is and if he's available to play. But I think the key is if he's come in the locker room and talk with the players and said, sorry, I made a mistake, etc., and try to regroup. Because otherwise, this can only create problems to Inter to have Icardi back. But they need it because everybody was praising Lautaro for the derby. But Icardi is, for me, at another level. Lautaro can be the striker of the future, maybe in 1 year time, etc. But still, Icardi is the best option. And so I think Inter has to do the best to solve the problem, even if it's not easy. And in the same time, there has been these rumors of an exchange Dybala-Icardi Inter-Juventus. This could make sense because Juventus maybe is looking for a striker, that it's already a top-level striker like Icardi. Dybala is not playing very well in Juventus, and he doesn't have a position because Allegri is trying to play him like a trequartista, while he's more a striker. So he could fit in Inter playing near Lautaro, while Icardi could play striker instead of Mandzukic. So I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting in the next 3 months to see how Icardi recovers the situation in Inter, and if these rumors start picking up more, then it looks like it can be something happening this summer.
That's a really interesting story, that. Tommy, your thoughts on the whole Icardi thing. How do you see this playing out? Can Icardi recover? Can he win back the trust of his teammates and his manager and the club and have a future at Inter? Or is it a foregone conclusion that come the summer, Mauro Icardi's gone and Inter need to look for a replacement?
I personally think he will leave. And I mean, it looks pretty obvious that this is the end for him at Inter, even though there's still his wife saying that we're still dealing with the club. There is still himself on Instagram posting pictures of himself with the Inter captain, you know, with the captain band and with the Inter shirt, saying things like Milan is, you know, black and blue, whatever. So he looks like he's kind of trying to give a signal that he doesn't want to go, but everything else says they will go. And if this trade will actually happen, Dybala with Icardi would be massive. And I think the Inter fans will really, really, really hate him after this. But I agree with Vittorio, that would make sense. I think Dybala and Inter will shine, would definitely be the best player. You could play as a striker like you used to do at Palermo. And it could become a fan's favorite, while Juventus is not. But they're not going to hate him, you know, to go for Inter. I think they will understand him. While Icardi going to Juve would be very tough. At the moment, I don't think Icardi is going to start. Not only because he's not been training for a month, which is obviously, but even if he was fit, I think Lautaro is still on top of him because he earned it. Now the fans like him. He's got the momentum. You know, that sometimes that overtakes the skills gaps that there is between the two. So if I was Spalletti, I would probably still use Lautaro until the end of the season. Even though I agree with Vittorio that he's not ready to be an Inter striker, yeah. But for the circumstances we are, I think he should start, and Icardi should just stay in the bench, keep talking, whatever, and then just find another team in the summer.
Yep, interesting stuff. We'll keep a close eye on that one and see how that develops. Now, I know we're jumping around a little bit, but let's go back to Roma for a minute. Roma, you know, upping the search now for a long-term manager, someone who's going to come in the summer to replace Claudio Ranieri. He's only been brought in on a short-term contract. And there's lots of reports flying around Italy today that the shortlist is down to Sarri and Gasperini. Tommy, You know, what do you make of that? Is Sarri and Gasperini two people that you would have thought would have been on the list? Are they two people that can come there and be a success? And or is it just paper talk?
Well, it's probably just paper talk. I think it's a bit early, but it would be very interesting, in my opinion, to see Gasperini and Roma, because we saw this in the past. Like, Gasperini did very, very well with Genoa. They almost reached a Champions League spot. They were playing incredible football. And then he went to Inter. I mean, if he went to Inter at the wrong moment, because it was after the triple eight and everything. But he failed at Inter. They didn't play nearly as good as was making Genoa play. And he kind of failed. Then he started again from a lower team like Atalanta. Now he's doing incredibly well. So if he goes to Roma, I don't know. He could fail again, potentially. But to be fair, if I was Gasperini, I don't know if I would accept the job, to be fair, because now Atalanta is not very far from Roma as a level. If they will keep the players they have and invest a little bit, Atalanta could really overtake Roma and become even better. So I think Gasperini is doing well there. The fans like him. They love him. I think if I was him, I would stay there, keep building the project, and who knows where they can get, rather than going to Roma in a moment that's like a revolution, because, you know, with Monchi left and then the manager and the atmosphere is not very good. I think it wouldn't be good for him. And for Sarri, well, it will be good for Sarri to go back to Italy for sure, because I think he needs it after failing in Chelsea. He shouldn't stay in the Prem. I don't even know if there's any clubs that really want him after what's going on. If he came back to Italy, I think it would do good. So in my opinion, for Roma, Sarri would be better among the two. And again, Sarri loves to play with a 4-3-3. It's not this 4-4-2. So I think the players that Roma already have, they will fit more into what Sarri, you know, how Sarri plays.
Vittorio, your thoughts on this proposed shortlist of Romas that includes Sarri and Gasperini?
Well, Gasperini is a genius for me, and he's proving it at Atalanta. The big problem, and I have friends that are working in the press in Bergamo, that Atalanta is having probably the best 3 years ever, and he's still able to fight with journalists, even in a season like that. So imagine him managing in Rome, where the press is 10 times bigger. The discussion, if you lose one match, you get hammered. Imagine how he would behave. And this is why he failed at Inter, because he's a genius. He really is, but he's not able to cope with the press, with the pressure. And Atalanta's season is unbelievable, and he doesn't speak with the press, with the local press, because once they wrote something wrong against him. Can you imagine in a big town like Roma? No, it's not possible. So I think it's not the right solution for him, but he said, I think last week, that he's looking for a big team eventually. But the other thing is, we have to see what happens with Roma this summer, because if they don't reach the Champions League, they'll have to sell a lot of players. And so, you know, if Gasperini comes in, you have to see which type of players he's going to be available. There's a big chance that he will finish in the same situation he had with Inter, with all players that already have gone everything, and a team that's at least average, nothing more. Sarri, well, we have to see if he goes there as well. And the problem with Sarri is a little bit like Gasperini. Great football, but he doesn't win. He showed it with Napoli. He had a great Napoli team, and he got out in the Champions League, out of the Europa League, out of the Coppa Italia. Yes, he didn't win the Scudetto because he was better, but he could have won all the other trophies. Well, not the Champions League, but Europa League and Coppa Italia for sure. And again, will he be able to cope with the pressure of Roma? I'm not sure. And Tommy said correctly that 4-3-3 is the perfect solution for Sarri, but Sarri has to have his players. So we have to see if Roma would buy the players Sarri wants. So that's the question.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting. Again, it's another story to keep your eye on, isn't it? I'm not sure that Sarri will last beyond the end of the season, if he lasts that long, at Stamford Bridge here in London. So he's of a name, of course, that will be bandied about when sort of big jobs become available in Italy. It's the natural thing to assume and to think, isn't it? Gasperini, as you guys say, I agree that he's a great manager. I'm not sure that he's ready, or I don't know if ready is the right word, but that he can handle the media spotlight perhaps that comes with managing a club like Roma or Inter, as we've seen in the past. Now, the last thing that I want to touch on this week, and we've got a couple of listener questions as well, so I'll get to those in a minute. But the first thing I want to do is talk about Sampdoria's proposed takeover. Now, this is supposedly in the final stages with Gianluca Vialli set to return as the president. Tommy, you're a Sampdoria fan. What are your thoughts on this? I mean, apparently this company are prepared to invest almost 120 million euros into the club. How are you feeling about this? Are you excited? Are you a bit skeptical?
It's a very difficult topic, in my opinion. To be fair, I try to avoid every article that talks about it because it's such a complicated situation. Ferrero is talking a lot about it, almost like he's nervous. He always says, you know, stop talking about this. It's not happening. Everyone is talking about Sampdoria selling, but then where's the money? I haven't seen any. Like, if you really weren't worried about it, you wouldn't talk about it like that and as much as he's doing. So I think there is an option, and it's real, and he knows that he might lose Sampdoria. And I think all this media propaganda he's doing is because he wants to put the price higher. At the end of the day, Ferrero, I like Ferrero. A lot of Sampdoria fans don't like him. I really like him. He's a businessman, and he's shown that in the past. He was very passionate, you know, weird, funny, whatever you want to call him. But he's a great businessman. His goal was to make money with the team, and that's what he did. He picked up the team basically for free. I mean, they have a lot of debts, which he has to pay, but he didn't really pay anything to get the club. And he got great stuff, that which we found a lot of young players. It wasn't really a thing before, which we developed, like Patrick Schick, for example, or, you know, even Pride or Torreira. And we sold them for a big price. And that was something that we haven't seen in a while, because for Sampdoria, we always struggle. Like, we had Cardi. Mauro Icardi was us. It was in the youth. We bought it for the youth for Barcelona. It came to youth for Sampdoria. And we sold the Inter for nothing. Something like, I don't remember now exactly, but something like 8 million plus half of this player, half of the youngster player, Bonazzoli, remember? And Gabbiani. That's what the deal was, which is unbelievable. Ferrero is much better of a businessman. He actually gets money, and he doesn't sell every player as well. Like, Pride has been with us for a long time. Linetti is kind of building a project, but not quite. Like, when the last moment when you need to keep that player, you always sell it. So he's doing a bit of both. So I'm quite happy with him, considering where we came from. But at the same time, you know, we could do better. So now there's this talk about this American fund with Vialli as a main guy to buy Sampdoria and invest a lot of money. I don't know. It could be great. Could be they could really invest a lot of money even in buying players and keeping them and starting a project. But they could also not, because spending 120 million, that's great. But are they gonna keep investing during the years, or are they just gonna sell and just make profit? I don't know. But I think it's something real, and I think something will happen. And again, based on how Ferrero's talking, and he looks quite nervous about it, I think it will definitely happen. And to have Vialli as a main guy would be great for a lot of Sampdoria fans, you know, to see him talking. So Ferrero is a bit of a showman, is he? He goes on TV. I don't know if you see him even from here in UK, but he goes on TV. He says a lot of random shit, like, to get the main pages. You know, it's really a character. Like, I thought you were, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. Like, while Vialli is going to be, I'm sure it's going to be like a serious guy, a respected man in the industry. So in the end of the day, I think it would be good, but it all comes down to this American fund, how actually good they will in investing and keeping players and building a project.
Yeah. I mean, Vittorio, what do you make of it? Is just putting Vialli in the front of it, Vialli as the so-called president, is that just an attempt by this company to make the deal look sweeter than it is, make the fans believe, make the fans buy into it and not oppose the whole thing?
That's the scaring part, because we saw in the last year a lot of unknown company buying clubs. You know, the Palermo is the latest example. An English company bought Palermo and then they didn't have money. We saw Venezia in pretty much the same situation, and so on. So the fact that the owner, the company that wants to buy Sampdoria, is still a mystery, this is a little bit of concern. The fact that they're using Vialli, that it's a well-known Sampdoria former player, in a certain way can be scaring, because if you have them, when Palotta bought Roma, they announced themselves immediately. You know, we already knew who he was, etc., etc. So why do they keep the mystery? It's not something secret. It's not something that you have to hide. So this is the scary part. As Tommy was saying, Ferrero did some positive things, but I don't think he has the money to invest heavily in the club and make them grow. So that's the problem with Sampdoria at the moment. Sorry, but at the same time, these owners love to be owners of club because, you know, they can talk to the newspaper, TVs. They get not only money, but they get to know a lot of people and they get popular and it's something they like. So it's not sure that he's going to sell the club if they're not going to give them a lot of money. And then if you're going to pay too much Sampdoria, then how much money do you really have to invest and improve the team? So I don't know. We're going to see what happens. There's a lot of talking about that. Vialli often talked about, said, I cannot say nothing. I don't know nothing. So, you know, it's a little bit too secret for me. I don't like this type of things.
Maybe we'll have to try and get Gianluca Vialli on the podcast and he can tell us exactly what's going on. That would be nice, wouldn't it? Yeah. Right. Let's move on to a couple of listener questions that have come in. We've had a few this week, but due to time, we're just going to go to a couple. The first one comes in from a regular listener of ours. He's been listening to every single show. So massive thanks to Nathan on Twitter. He asks, with Inter's tougher schedule, who is now the favourite for third place? So starting with yourself, Tommy, who do you make the favourite to finish third at the moment?
I think Milan is still the favourite. I think the derby was just the same. They have a better schedule, Milan, if you see the games that are left. And again, all the problems that Inter have, they're still there. They won the derby. That's definitely going to give a lot of positivity and momentum and stuff, but they still have those problems. So I think in the long run, Milan will overtake.
Vittorio, do you agree with that?
I agree with Tommy. Inter was in desperate mode in the derby and they won, but they cannot pretend to be in desperate mode every single week. And now with Icardi back, they are back in that situation. As I said before, you have to see how the team embraced their former captain. Is he going to be captain again? We don't know. So, yeah, a lot of question marks with Inter. A lot of question marks even with Milan. What happened? Is it just a week that Piontek doesn't score? Is going to continue? Is Gattuso going to finally start finding the right solution for Milan? Roma is playing badly, but it's not far away. Lazio is probably the best team playing, but has too many points below. So, you know, I think at the moment Milan is favorite, but it's going to be interesting.
Yep, it will be indeed. And this next question comes in from an Arsenal fan, actually. It came through my personal Twitter. This is from Mark. And he asks, what can Arsenal expect from Napoli in the Europa League? Obviously, it was a draw that most Arsenal fans didn't want to see. And I know, Vittorio, we're going to talk a little bit about it on the when you join me on the Chronicles of Aguna podcast. But in terms of from Tommy now, what do you think Arsenal should expect from Napoli? There's a lot of talk today, isn't there, that Carlo Ancelotti thought he had the Arsenal job in the bag and he's a bit pissed off about that. So will he be looking for revenge and will he sort of turn Unai Emery's side over?
Well, I think that both the teams were very disappointed when they saw the draw. They could have had much more luck, both of them. That could potentially be the winner of the whole competition out of this tie. So it's going to be very interesting. Napoli is definitely going to go full squad. We talked in the other episode last week that Ancelotti really cares about European competition and why he shouldn't, because we all know that the league is over. So I think Napoli is going to go with full squad. So will Arsenal, because obviously Arsenal is still fighting for the top four. But in case they won't make it, then they can still access the Champions League through the Europa League, which is absolutely vital for a club like Arsenal. So they will both go with full strength and a lot of motivation. So I think it's very hard to predict. I can't really tell who's going to win. I think whoever wins is going to be very tight.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Vittorio, we'll save your thoughts for the Chronicles of Aguna. Guys, that brings us to the end of this week's show. Another fantastic discussion. My thanks to you both. Vittorio, do you want to let our listeners know how they can check out your new YouTube channel where you're putting out regular Italian football videos in English? So let our listeners know how they can find it.
Yeah, well, on YouTube, if you search Vittorio Campanile, you can find me there, and every day a YouTube video on Serie A and Italian football, if you like.
And once again, we'll put the link in the bio this week so that you guys can find it in the description down below. Tommy, thank you very much. Once again, do you want to let our listeners know how they can follow you, sir?
Yeah, sure. So for my personal Twitter, it's Tommy99, which I will probably post a lot of Messi and Sampdoria content. But for my work, you can just follow 99 in every platform for daily content about Premier League, about international football as well.
Brilliant stuff. Brilliant stuff. And we'll be back next week. Don't forget, guys, if you haven't already done it, you can enter our competition. Thanks to the guy over at the North Curve. They've donated a fantastic retro football pillow. I don't know if you guys have seen it on our Twitter page. It is our pinned tweet.
It's lovely.
It's brilliant, isn't it? They've got so many of all different clubs. All you need to do is go onto our Twitter page, which is at Simply Serie A, retweet it, follow us, and follow the North Curve. That is all you need to do to be in with a shout of winning this fantastic prize. And I'm sure we'll be having more discussions with the North Curve, and we'll be getting some more fantastic prizes for you guys as well further down the line. So do enter. You've got to be in it to win it. And we'll be back next week, where we'll be looking ahead to a magnificent week of Serie A football. There is obviously the international break, so next week's show will be a little bit more of a preview show, but there are some big games to preview, aren't there, guys? So we'll be looking forward to that. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, wherever you listen from. And we'll be back next week.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.